Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. Cofield and Company back on a Tuesday, starting off the week. Griffin is here. Adam Hill is the company. Busy week, NFL, the openers, multiple openers. We got to get into the craziness a little later in the show with the trip to Brazil. I thought what one of the Eagles said about safety holds a lot of water. And then I heard over on Fox Sports Radio, our sister station, Doug Gottlieb and Sean Merriman poo-pooing it. And if anyone knows about Brazil, at least the stories, it's Adam Hill from UFC. Maybe not firsthand, but you've heard the story. So we'll get into that. Did the NFL gaffe by putting a game in Brazil? And then now the players are like, we can't leave the hotel? Like, why are we here? So we'll get into that. College football, obviously a big focus. Griffin's back from vacation, so we'll have some time later on to talk about his cruise and why he was on a cruise right before the season. I mean, vacation planning, Adam. You sure?
It's the time.
The week
to go.
Before?
Yes.
Week one of college football?
Yes.
We got to establish some rules here.
That's when you go, because there's nothing. Your fun is done in this business.
It is.
Like, your time for fun is done.
It gets a little busy coming up.
Literally, I was actually just on a text with some friends who were like, hey, when can we all like have a weekend where we go somewhere? And I was like, February?
Yeah.
Because we did a lot of weekends this summer. We just went and you know, went away for the weekend, met up with some folks, and you know, had some trips.
Couple days here or there, Adam?
Yeah. When can we do that? February. I literally said February 10th. So yeah, after the Super Bowl.
I don't even say February. I say mid-April. One of my I posted a picture of him a while ago. One of my old bosses from Sports Fan Radio Network was getting all reminiscent because we've had some people pass away recently from the network. And he's like, when can we do a big reunion? Everyone wants to do it in Vegas. And I was like, mid-April? Like, you guys can do it. I'm like, I won't be there.
You just threw me off. I actually did a Pharrell show last week or 10 days ago, whatever it was. And I'd brought your name up like early in the interview and it just completely derailed it.
Wait, does he even know who I am?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was gonna do the impression, but I won't. But Steve Covey, you know, he's
funny.
Into it
I've met Pharrell like 10 times, and he's like, he is one of the nicest guys ever in radio.
Literally.
And I'm like, I've done a couple of guest spots with him. We barely crossed over at the end of Sports Fan Radio Network, but he's got to be like that with everyone.
Yeah, I think so.
Because anyone who like really knows me would be like, eh.
Well, I was gonna
skip over the name
because as you mentioned, like you've met him. I've met him like with you like 4 or 5 times. Oh, and I knew there was no chance. I was like, it's fine. But he was incredibly nice every time.
You know, big fella.
When I did the show the other day, he's like, you know, good to have you on. Good to meet you. I was like, well, I didn't say we've met, but I was like, yeah, you know, do some work with Cofield. I know you know him from. And then it just totally went into Sports Fan and Vegas. And
oh, wow. Okay,
loved
cool.
It. Yeah.
Very cool.
It was good.
Very cool. You know, Adam's still here. He's still in Vegas. I think Adam could be in L.A., New York, wherever he wants to go. But I also think you like it here. Like, you kind of know where you belong.
Yeah.
And you've got family here. And maybe, like I've always said, and this is going to sound like we're, you know, we could leave anytime we want. I've always said there are other places I could not exist because of my personality. And I don't mean on the air. I mean off.
Sure.
Right? And, you know, as I see this Florida State story unfolding, we know Uncle Dave. Uyunga Lele, he's the dad of DJ, and he was the guy who handled Jaden Mayava's transfer, so a lot of people don't like him in the market. I'm not sure people with UNLV football love him. But I don't know what's going to happen with DJU. I did find it really interesting, and if you didn't see over the weekend, check that yesterday, really.
Yeah.
Florida State lost again. They had high expectations. They lost, and they also got kind of steamrolled. And, you know, for ACC Media Day, they didn't have DJU show up. And I don't know the kid or of the kid well, but I think he's got a personality that maybe isn't made for the Florida States and the Clemsons of the world and the intensity of the fans. And he was probably at the right spot at Oregon State, or maybe he should have followed his coach to Michigan State, or I don't know, man. And I'm not saying he's the reason they're failing, but I'm going to use the word fear because I do respect mental health, and there's so much pressure on kids now. And I know there's a lot of people out there who are like, tough it up. Shut up. But I almost feel like his dad sold him down a river that is not the right waterway. because this is not working out so far for Florida State. Mike Norvell looks completely confused. And then you add in, you know, Florida State's got a lot of bluster and they're puffing out their chest. They were great last year until the quarterback went down. They're suing. They're leaving the ACC. We're better. You know, all that. And they're losing to Georgia Tech and Boston College. I mean, everything has just freaking caved in. And I wonder how the quarterback is going to react to now lots of people. I mean, he gets mocked on all the time, but lots of people are like, stinks. Two games in. Sucks.
Well, it's amazing. And, you know, to just kind of tie it in with your talk about the ACC, the teams that are, you know, too good for the ACC, quote unquote, are not good anymore. And they also both have high level quarterback prospects who are just not working out and who don't mesh well with being at that school. And I'm talking, of course, about Clemson, too. Like, Florida State and Clemson both kind of in the same situation where they have big-name prospect quarterbacks. And DJU has obviously been several places, but obviously coming out of high school was this massive prospect. And we haven't really seen it work out for either of them. In the case of Florida State, it's been ugly because they, you know, nearly came back and won that game last week in Ireland. And then yesterday they just weren't really in it much at all in the game. They just haven't looked good at all in these 2 weeks. And this is a team that had massive expectations, top 10 expectations, like certainly expected to be in the playoffs. And it's not going to happen.
I mean, I am absolute contrarian guy, and I know you are to a certain extent. I have dozens of overreactions I can go on in college football, and I will be playing against so many hot takes this week. But I don't have a really good argument to say that Florida State's going to go like 8-4 or 9-3. It just – and I don't want to panic after 2 weeks, but it just – it doesn't look good at all, and now they've got Eat Poop Gate going down. Everything's gate. What exactly happened here? Because then I saw I was just scrolling through the phone, getting last couple of updates, and I saw Danny Cannell. There was a tweet featuring Danny Cannell saying he would eat the poop, making it look like he tweeted it out. And I'm like, I don't think that's right.
No.
That's fake.
No, it was a fan that was sick of the Florida State hate and said, if they lose this game, I will eat dog poo. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And everybody started looking for it as soon as the game was over, and it was gone.
Yeah.
Because they had quickly deleted their tweet and deleted their account and bounced from X. And I'm sure starting up a new troll account somewhere or whatever they're going to do. Like,
right.
Again, these things are often referred to as wagers or bets. They're not bets. If there's not anything on the other side, it's not a bet. Like if you're not getting something back or putting something up, that's not a wager. It's just a vow, like however you want to put it. A wager would insinuate like you're getting something if they win. There's nothing coming back on that side. It was just all of us getting to see this idiot eat poop. Just what we all wanted.
Do you know the story?
Actually, you know what? I didn't want it.
I don't want to see it.
I don't need to see it. Disgusting. I don't want to see it. Yeah. I think it's a funny thing to think about or goof about or talk about. Like, I don't need to watch the video of it if it ever exists.
But I do think when you make a bet, no matter how outlandish it is, you need to pay off the bet.
Yeah.
Unless you're a rando and, you know, Fred 17 numbers afterwards and there's not going to be any accountability. But sure. If you do make a bet, you know, there's been a couple. There's been some college football announcers and radio people who said, I'll walk wherever if they lose. And it's like, okay, we'll get ready to walk the 700 miles. Yeah. They did it. They paid it off.
Our guy John Anik famously said he would get a tattoo if I think it was Nick Diaz lost,
yeah.
Nick or Nate, and they did. You know, he lost, and he got the tattoo. Like those, you know, those things do happen.
2002, if John Anik made bets, it's okay. 2024, that's not allowed anymore. So I think they shut him down on that, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Outlandish bets and claims and rants, and they're very corporate now.
Yeah, it's a different
world. Except for Dana.
Different era.
Adam Hill, Cofield. On a Tuesday, wrapping up college football week two. We're going to jump right and check that one. We're going to jump right into week two with Sammy Panayotovic in just a little bit. This weekend was awesome. We're going to talk about an event that was at the Luxor. One of the greatest things I've ever seen. But the day before on Sunday, I was over at Whiskey Stadium. Big Modelo blowout. That place was packed.
Saw videos of you giving out Modelos.
Yeah, walking around with buckets.
Yeah. Santa Cofield.
Trying to get Ella, you know, telling stupid jokes and then laughing at them because they couldn't hear me.
Sure.
You know, every LSU fan, I'm like, you're picking USC, right? And then I pause for a second. I'm like, and then I watch it back. I'm like, I hate that. Why did I do that? Idiot. It's terrible. Well, I don't do it often, but it's like, it's just, you know how both you and I are really good in those, you know, meet and greet situations.
Oh, yeah, we're fantastic.
We're great at it.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be fake. I just want to start cursing and talking sports. But you can't walk right up to someone and start dropping F-bombs and talking trash. Yeah. You have to be somewhat cordial.
Yeah. I mean, you're in a professional setting. You're being, you're representing the station and the bar.
Sponsor. Okay, the crowd is one of the stories. The game itself we'll get to. The crowd's one of the stories. If anyone was going to report on an official record crowd size, thank God there was one guy on the scene.
Exactly.
No one is more vigilant on making sure it's a record that's really a record than Adam Hill. Were you satisfied?
Yeah.
Did you do the research?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'll tell people one of the things that you can just look for. It's obvious you don't have to be a professional journalist to understand this. Yeah. If you hear an announcement of a record of some sort, especially as it pertains to crowd size, listen for how many caveats are in it. Guess how many there were at this? Zero.
That's what I was most surprised at. I was like, wait, that Allegiant record? Largest, over the Super Bowl, over the Raiders.
Largest attendance. Well, they opened up the standing room tickets like right before the game, for sure. But also, if you think about the Super Bowl, for those that haven't been to one, which, by the way, I would not recommend going to one. Stay at home. It's much better. But they also have like four of the sections in the stadium are overflow media. A lot of them are just corporate. They're turned into like some kind of special seating for corporate, that sort of thing. So, yeah, that attendance was never going to be the highest of all time, but higher than some of the concerts they've had there, everything else. Largest attendance at Allegiant Stadium that game on Sunday. And it was accurate, and it was true, and it was loud. And I felt not
– loudest you've ever heard?
Yeah, and I felt bad.
Louder than a Raiders game.
Yeah.
Clip it.
Yeah.
Keep going.
I don't think anybody would disagree with that. But
I think I'm sure
also,
Raider Nation would disagree with
that. Has there been a full stadium of Raider fans? It's always – some on each side. That was the case again on Sunday, but both fan base were really into it. And I will say, I don't think bad is the right word, but I felt in the aftermath, I was like, why did I have to do that? Or why did I do that? But I always do these things. Like, there was some workers about 2 hours after the game. I was on the elevator, and there were some workers from Allegiant, and they were on the elevator talking, and they were blown away. They're like, I can't believe how loud it was. And they were saying, it was so much louder than the Super Bowl in here. That's crazy. And I said, well, the Super Bowl isn't real fans. You understand that, right? And they're like, what do you mean?
You said that to them?
Yeah, I was like, what do you, they're like, what
you're
do you
in
mean?
School, you're even school and the workers at the stadium. I said, Adam Hill always educating.
I said, well, that's all corporate tickets. It's not fans of the teams that actually go to the game. And they said, oh, that actually makes sense. Never thought about that. But, they were blown away by how much louder it was than the Super Bowl working the game on Sunday. And there's no question. It was.
Coming back. There's the game itself we'll get to. The impact, the overreaction, and also, Vegas. If you got a rabid fan base coming to town, and especially one that's based in Louisiana and the SEC, we got...
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
So, Adam, did you hear that multiple places ran out of Brewskis with the LSU crowd?
I had seen some of that on social media, for sure. You never know how accurate those are necessarily, but it seemed like it was from people who would know that was the case.
I heard multiple reports that Mandalay Bay ran out. Downtown, there was a place that ran out. Our stadium source, we have lots of them, at the Owl, no problem. They were ready.
Oh, they were ready.
They were ready.
They knew. I will also say, they were. I know they were coming in full force because my flight from Houston on Sunday morning, coming back from the UNLV game, was all purple, and to the point where the flight attendant when we landed was like, welcome to Las Vegas. Your luggage at Carousel 4, and go Tigers. And I was like, okay. I didn't know we were on that kind of plane today. That's good. You're going to celebrate it. But yeah, they also as we were boarding. They kind of got on and said, find your seats. And, they're like, obviously, this is a Purple Nation flight today because they could already see all the people in the gear and everything. So they were coming in full force, even as late as just a few hours before the game.
Do you feel for fans who came here but didn't go to the game? Because maybe they hit the ground. I'm talking about LSU fans.
No.
They hit the ground and they were like, oh, crap, I can't afford this.
No, because I've done that with games before. Yeah. We go to the city of the game and not even intend on going. That's fun. Go where all the fans are and just go. I mean, there's some cases where it's better to just find a bar, like, you know, go to Whiskey by the Stadium, watch the game there, and celebrate with the fans after, you hope. And obviously, when it goes against you, it's not quite as fun. I will say I was at Whiskey until maybe almost 1 on Sunday night after the game, and mostly USC fans. Because the LSU fans were long gone at that point.
They retreated back to, I don't know if they went back to Mandalay Bay. I joked on Twitter. I'm like, all right, kickoff. You got 4 hours to restock the beer. So take it from other properties, get to the warehouse. I don't know. Something.
Figure it out.
You got to figure it out.
Send somebody to the Lees or something.
That is crazy, though. The attendance beats the Super Bowl for the game. And as Adam said, there's just more availability because not as many seats are taken by the NFL and by the media. So super impressive turnout, nearly 64,000. It was great business for Vegas. And hey, listen, we put up a lot of public money to build Allegiant, and they promised 52 events a year, and they've surpassed that, and they brought in some really big events. And this is, I mean, good for John Cecenti and company, because John runs the Las Vegas Bowl, and we're buddies with John. I mean, that's like, that's a dream right there.
Yeah,
that you sell it out beyond belief, and then you've got people all strewn all over the city, because now then you can go to the Strip and sell other games like this. And there's, you know, there's only whatever. I mean, the fact that USC is right down the road helps. There's probably only, what, 6, 7, 8 college fan bases that would turn out like this. But you can sell it and say, hey, there's not much of a risk. We're going to get a monster crowd in town. We might get a couple hundred thousand fans from one particular school.
Yeah.
Big business.
No question. And, you know, there are some challenges to having these types of games. I wrote about that on Sunday of – you know, why I feel it should happen. This should happen every year, this massive blockbuster game. But there's some things in the way of making that happen, including teams not wanting to play big games anymore because they're trying to protect their record.
And that's going to be the challenge, because we don't know how schools are going to treat this. If I'm in a conference, well, if I'm in the Big Ten or the SEC, I'm not playing anyone out of conference.
Yeah. Well, and that's
and
the
I
thing.
Have so much money that I can do pay games.
Well, there's one way to fix it, and that's kind of what I wrote about on Sunday too in my column was, you know who this is on? The committee. Reward good losses over wins.
Yep.
And if you do that, and if you tell teams, we'd rather see you go 0-1 against somebody good than 3-0 against 3 bad teams, and that's how you score it. If you're putting like teams that are 9-3 in over teams that are 12-0. And doing the right thing, that will fix it.
And we're going to see it on the back end of the selection with a group of 5. Yeah. They're going to be put to the test. There is going to be someone from the Mountain West or the AAC who wins the conference championship who will be 9-3. And there could be a 12-0 or 11-1 team from a lesser conference. And they're buffoons. So I think the first year they will reward the Liberties or the App States or the Texas States.
Yep.
Shouldn't do that.
Very possibly.
Shouldn't do that, because if you're gonna go, they're gonna get caught. That's what's gonna happen here. You know what's gonna happen. Maybe you wrote this. You should talk to me before you do your columns. They're gonna get caught because they are going to put in 9-3 teams from the SEC and the Big Ten over 10-2s from the ACC and the Big 12. They're gonna be like, strength of schedule, and they'll be like, Liberty's in. Sorry, UNLV, Boise, Memphis, you went 9-3. Yeah, but the schedule, it matters for up there, but down. Yep, sorry.
Well, there's also
– we have to get that former Air Force general on. As you rake him over the friggin' coals.
Yeah.
I can't wait to talk to him again.
There's also issues. Like, if you schedule a game like this, you know it's going to be good. Like, hey, USC, LSU, you know your opponent's going to be good. It's great. The disaster is for a school like UNLV who tries.
Yeah.
Houston might be the worst team that's ever taken the field in college football.
They got strong, but they could be the worst Power 4 team this year.
I think they're gonna lose by 1,000 this week. And now all of a sudden, the people are like, whoa, UNLV schedule. Yeah, they tried.
Right.
They played a road game as a Big 12 team.
They went on the road, yeah.
Like, what do you want? You can't necessarily just predict who's going to be good and bad each year. This is scheduled a long time ago.
Right.
And Houston stinks.
They weren't good.
And now all of a sudden, they
got broken, too.
Yeah, and it's going to be like, oh, you beat Houston on the road. Look at that. You tried.
Yep. Well, we'll see. We hope this new system will bring more accountability and consistency.
That's the hope.
I fear.
But the committee has to do the right thing.
364-1100, caller 7, 364-1100. Show coming up with 5 Finger Death Punch and Marilyn Manson. It's coming up on September 8th, so we got just a couple days away. MGM Grand Garden Arena is a spot. AXS.com is your spot to get tickets for 5 Finger Death Punch with Marilyn Manson. Griffin's got 2 tickets right now. Caller 7, caller 7, caller 7, 364-1100.
to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
I was booking a guest for later in the week, Adam, and the person told me, they're like, oh, yeah, I can do it, but I'll be running around town at that time, signing up for all the contests. And I said, absolutely not. You're not on the show. You're banned. Okay. It's us or the highway.
Choose what you want.
Guest booking is hard. Yes. Choose to get in high-level contest and win lots of money, or spend 11 minutes with Willie Ramirez and myself. Most people will choose the spot, actually, over the money, surprisingly. No. He's on. I was lying. I made that all up. Circa Million and Circa Survivor is one of the high-level contests around town. Circa Million, you are picking 5 games against the spread every single week. We've got a ticket that I bought in. Cofield and Company is in. Circa Million, $6 million guaranteed. You pick the 5 against the spread. There's quarterly prizes. The record tabulates throughout the season, season-ending prizes. And then Circa Survivor is one game, one winner, straight up, each week. You win, you advance. You lose, you're out. People love Circa Survivor so much that they had 10 mil guaranteed. They're over 10 mil. So the prize pool continues to grow and grow and grow. It's a winner take all. It gets wacky at the end of the season. It's very entertaining. You got to get to a Circa Sportsbook really now. Deadline for this one is 2 p.m. on Saturday. It's Circa Million, Circa Survivor with Circa Sports. And we'll be down there with the live show. Down the stretch we come as we head towards the NFL season. We'll get back to week one and look ahead to week two in college football in a couple of minutes. Always got to squeeze in a little bit of baseball because the balance at the top of both leagues is incredible. But one of the stories that we have really not paid attention to, and should we? Like, when you're, what are you going to do when you're old on the rocking chair? Knit? No. You gonna knit socks?
I imagine, like, watch TikTok videos and sport live bet games.
I think
games.
There's going to be something better than that when you're
live
old.
Live bet games? Sure. Yeah. Probably.
You'd be like, back in my day, I watched the Chicago White Sox go 34-128. Oh, it was a sight to behold. That's the old Adam Hill voice. Should we be watching this more so we can tell tales of putrid baseball in the future? They are. They're terrible. And then poor Chris Flexen. I'm trying to think of a really bad losing pitcher in history.
Wasn't it like Anthony Young that had like a almost 20-something game?
Well,
streak.
I remember the A's had a 20-game loser. That might have been McCaddy. I'm doing this all off the top of my head, folks. So, like I say all the time, there's nothing left in my brain except food knowledge. And then, like, angry rants about, I don't know, traffic in Vegas.
From May 1992 to July 93, Anthony Young lost 27 straight decisions.
I feel like there was a Pirates pitcher, maybe a DeJesus, who went, like, 2-17. But the point is, Chris Flexen right now is in pitcher hell. He's on a bad team. He's not pitching well. And what's happening?
Well, they just keep losing every time he's out there.
And they keep rolling him out.
20 times.
They've
started him 20. The last 20 times they've started him, they've lost the game.
Chris Flexen was here in Vegas, too. Chris Flexen, what's the best way to put it? Chris Flexen is a poor man's Patrick Corbin. Except he doesn't make $25 million a year.
That's right.
Patrick Corbin, the Nationals signed him. And he has consistently been a 5.5 ERA pitcher. It's like Mike Hampton finally just gave up with the Rockies because he signed one of those deals and he's like, I can't do this anymore. I can't throw to a 5.98 ERA and lose 17 games.
Every once in a while, Corbin has like this, he'll have like a 12 strikeout, win 3-1.
He's back! There it is! By the way,
we
have a fantasy league that we do together.
We do.
Someone added him this week. I'm like, what are you doing? Flamethrower to your roster.
Every week I've looked, I'm like, no, I can't do it. God, I know he gets strikeouts, just can't do it.
It's crazy, though.
He eats innings.
Yeah, but they're terrible. He's eating terribly.
He's
very gluttonous.
He helps your bullpen.
Quality start for this guy. 6 innings, only 5 runs. The game.
It's not a quality start.
It is.
Sure.
The White Sox are terrible. This is going to be one of the most fun stories ever going into the offseason where Jerry Reinsdorf's like, new stadium. Public money, let's go. We're going to leave. And then baseball will try to sell, like, I'm in 7 cities lined up right now to get the White Sox.
Take one.
Who just had a 34-win season.
And they're like, if we give you a stadium, is Flexen still here? Can we get rid of him? He's actually not even terrible.
Is there a world where – find me someone who predicted the A's will finish 33.5 games ahead of the White Sox in the overall standings.
I mean, there was plenty that predicted the A's would finish above them. But not,
but this, not 33 and a half.
Not this much above them.
Especially, you'd be like, oh, the A's must have won 90 games. What a shocker.
No, the A's were also terrible.
72.
Yeah, they're also bad.
I think the gap's going to be bigger than 33.5.
It could be. It's the worst team I've ever seen.
It's amazing. On the way back, our buddy Steve Kim checks in. We got issues in San Fran again. I know he's not happy with that. And the SI swimsuit issue, like I've said many times, you give me a catcher's mitt, I'll get on with it. You know what I mean? I mean, the SO is beautiful. Lovely person, right? Very attractive. But, you know, come on. SI swimsuit issue, Whitlock and Kim went off. You got to hear this.
Steve Kim, the host of the 3 Knockdown Rule, joins Cofield and Company, presented by Snack Nutrition.
Well, big college football weekend for many. There were a lot of teams that lost out there. So overreaction Tuesday in this case. One of the schools that did well was UNLV. Barry Odom Radio Show is back tomorrow as the coach is at Parkway Tavern 215 and Flamingo. I'll be hosting the show along with former Rebel quarterback Caleb Herring, $2 Miller Lite during the hour. That's Parkway Tavern 215 and Flamingo. Last week we had about 600-700 people out there, so we'll see what kind of crowd turns out. You should turn out. It's a nice win. Good impression nationally. Got some highlights out of it with Sluka Doncic. All right, let's get into college football here in about 4 minutes. Steve Kim is with us. It's brought to you by Snack Nutrition. He's up with Adam and Adam Hill and Cofield. Steve, what's going on, buddy?
Good afternoon, guys. How you guys doing?
Good, man. Exhilarating college football weekend. We had a good weekend here, too, with the big crowd for LSU and USC. So I got to start off on the periphery first, and then we start to focus back into sports. I saw a video of you and Whitlock, and I saw a bunch of images of ladies in bikinis. Was that old? Was that an old SI swimsuit deal? Because I had never seen that one. You guys are talking about the DEI of the SI swimsuit?
Yeah. I mean, I think we talked about it last week, okay. And just kind of the decline of Western civilization, which has been kind of symbolized or coalesced with that. I mean, we can't have anything good anymore. You know, we used to be a serious country. We used to be respected. Now we're doing this, and we have fullbacks and, you know, people kind of mixed up on the cover of what used to be prime real estate. Used to look forward to it every spring.
Wait a second. Are you calling did you reference some of the women in the SI swimsuit edition as fullbacks?
Did I? I don't know about that.
A little more stockily built.
Okay.
Maybe a little more stockily built.
We all have eyes. They're not exactly Paulina Porizkova. Where have you gone? She was a serious human being, you know? And, you know, yeah, the more recent ones, they really fill out the bathing suit. They really, really, really fill out the bathing suit. But it is what it is. You know, that it was a special magazine at one time, guys. I used to look forward to it every Wednesday and Thursday, going to the mailbox and reading Curry Kirkpatrick and the young Rick Riley and Rick Tellender. And now they got AI writing their articles, and they have, you know, larger women for their swimsuit edition.
I literally just learned right now that Sports Illustrated still publishes.
Well, they're all over the world. What are you talking about? We have the great Hondo Carpenter in our market. That's Sports Illustrated, truly. Wait, why are you laughing?
I think they do an internet edition. Do they still do the magazine print?
No. I think that went by.
They don't, yeah. So there you have it.
Things change, my friend. Yeah. Things change.
Not for the better.
Well, you know what? Let's talk about this one. Is there a chance that, as you call him, His Excellency, Turki Alaşık, could be going the Amazon route of discounting everything in terms of pay-per-views, scooping up a bunch of good fights, do that for 3 years, crush the competition, sort of the ultimate goal of Amazon. Could he do this to boxing pay-per-views and give us boxing pay-per-views for like $20 a pop for the next couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't thought of it that way. I do know, and I was told this several months ago, and I mentioned it in passing on the 3 Knockdown rule, he wants to start a boxing league. Now, I don't know how that would fly. I don't know what the structure would be. I don't know if that'd even be popular with the fans. That is interesting, the $20 pay-per-view. I am curious to see that those who find other means of watching pay-per-views without actually paying for it, would $20 then entice them to say, okay, you know what, there you go, take my Peter Gammons, because that's what the guy looks like now, right, on the $20 bill, Peter Gammons. take my Peter Gammons. I'll buy it because here's the thing where people do have a point. Canelo against Berlanga, which is a fight that I don't think a lot of people are looking forward to. I don't think ticket sales are great for that event in a couple weeks. That pay-per-view is like $90.
Yep.
That's actually kind of ridiculous, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. It's outrageous. I mean, on the ground to go to the event, it's crazy. And we've got that head-to-head sphere against, you know, an MMA against boxing. But, yeah, see, here's the thing. I don't steal fights, but I would imagine that while people are happy to steal fights, they also – they can't all get good streams. So would it be worth $20 to actually get it?
I don't know about that.
Can you get really good streams?
The streams are no longer like looking through an aquarium, I've heard.
Okay.
Because I do buy fights.
I've heard.
Quality of the streams,
sure.
We've come a long way from Justin TV. Let's just put it to you that way.
Good shout out.
But there is coded phrase, guys. On Twitter, when a fight's announced and they say it's pay-per-view, I always get the calls of, I'm not watching this fight.
Right.
And that's like, yeah, in other words, I'm watching it via stream. I'm not paying for it.
Yes.
You know, you're not going to pay for it, but you'll find a way to watch. Let's just be honest about that.
Sorry, that was awesome. I was just distracted because I'm looking at a side-by-side of Peter Gammons and Andrew Jackson right now.
Is it pretty close?
It's pretty close.
It is.
It's not bad. I mean, I feel like I need Twib notes after hearing that.
Okay. All right. Did you take notes on the Conor Stallions documentary?
I kind of did. Look, as an Ohio State, I can see why Ohio State fans absolutely hate it, and they do. I can see why other fans are saying that this was a puff piece. They didn't learn anything. I still thought it was kind of fascinating. Conor Stallions is pathologically intelligent. I find him to be like a football savant. And I'm not going to lie to you. If there was a University of Steve Kim and they started a football program, I would hire the guy in a minute.
Yep.
I would. I would have a very specific role for him, but I found it amazing that he had this database of where every player in America is from and where you should be recruiting. That is some proprietary information that I think a lot of NFL and college programs would love to have their hands on.
Yeah, and Michigan still has it, and that's part of, I think, the overlooked part of what Conor Stallions did at Michigan was not just, you know, quote-unquote sign-stealing, and as a Michigan fan, go ahead and prove it. But, yeah, I think that he does a lot of things outside of that. And I think what the documentary did uncover was, yes, this was unbelievably in-depth. It was absolutely cheating, no question about it. And it was far from the only school that's doing it. The FOIA requests that came out during the documentary I thought were very telling, and they were kind of glossed over. I think it was that – I think I timed it on my phone, how long they spent on it. It was 6 seconds. The fact that they requested information from all these other major programs of how many tickets that they had purchased in the same way, and 100% came back, all of them did, that was kind of glossed over in the documentary, but I thought that was very telling as well. And clearly exposing Ohio State as having violated federal law to uncover this absolutely needs to be explored as well. Like, I think this opened up a whole new world that the NCAA is going to have a very tough time with. And we also saw in the documentary, Steve, NCAA not very good at questioning when they have real lawyers coming back at them.
Boy.
Yeah, I mean, look, here's the issue. Everyone steals signs. I've heard about this. There's certain teams that are really, really good at it, too. And it's almost like, look, it's a level playing field, just not the one you think it's on. And this whole notion that other teams aren't doing it, look, if you're a real football team, you're doing it. I just love the fact, the unbelievable irony that the first time Conor Stallions ever did this, he was a low-level Navy midshipman assistant. And who's he stealing signs from? The Ohio State Buckeyes. And then the guy was good at it, and then he makes up his own spreadsheet of signs. I mean, I find it genius. But here's the thing. I've talked to football coaches, and they'll tell you, sign stealing and what you can get out of it is a little bit overrated. They will tell you that. Now, that they still break rules within the legalities of what is allowed, yeah. But most of the times, the personnel that you have out there in the formation will tell you what a play is. These guys study it. They have tendencies. And then if a specific player is out there, one coach said, Steve, there are certain players that we know when they're out on the field, we tell our defense, and that whole defense was, hey, number five's out there. Watch him. So, look, talent still wins games. That is the reality, and you still have to be able to execute. But, again, did they break some rules? I don't think there's any question they did.
One of the big winners of the college football weekend was Cam Ward and the Hurricanes. So you're a Miami Hurricane fan. Was that way beyond your expectations?
Kind of, sort of. I mean, look, I had gone on record on several shows. I expected a 2.5 touchdown victory. I thought Miami was the clearly better team top to bottom. And if they would have eked by 24-21, I would actually have some concerns about this team. I believe this team can be a playoff unit, one that doesn't just sneak in, but actually makes a run. All the pieces are in place if they stay healthy. And, you know, a lot of rumors now about how long Billy Napier is going to be there. This, to me, was not about Miami winning. It was about could they be dominant. And for the most part, they were. So now you move on. It's only one game. And they actually left points on the table. So this is a good sign moving in. But there's still 11 more games to play here.
Well, it shows the impact of getting the right transfer portal quarterback. Can you take us back in time to whatever it was, 3 months ago? I cannot remember who Miami was battling for Cam Ward. Was Florida in that battle?
It was Florida State, really. Florida was bringing back Graham Mertz, who statistically was pretty good last year. Although his completion percentage is a little bit deceiving because a lot of dinking and dunking with the type of throws he was making. And my understanding was that Cam was leaning towards Miami for most of this process. Then he put his name into the NFL hat back in late December. And Florida State thought they had a chance, but then I was told by somebody that Cam Ward and his girlfriend, and they certainly have a role, they like Miami a lot better than Tallahassee. Surprise, surprise. And then a financial figure was met in terms of the NIL collective, and then he became a Hurricane. But you see the difference. I mean, Florida State last year was 13-0, and I know they lost a lot of players to the NFL draft, but Jordan Travis, I think, is so underrated, that loss, because he had the ability to take Mike Norvell's offense and to expand it with his ability to escape and extend plays and just make magic. DJU just is not that guy, and I think he's got the yips now, fellas.
I opened the show talking about that I think his dad may have screwed him, putting him in the wrong spot, because I think mentally right now he's having some trouble. Let's close strong on a couple of stories. First of all, what's your reaction to Ricky Pearsall from the Niners getting shot? He's back at work, but on the streets of San Fran.
None of this really surprises me. I'm glad that he's okay. It's funny, that story actually came out during the Florida-Miami game. I was at Coach JB's house, and I was like, wow. I don't know what to say other than the fact that that is no longer the city that Tony Bennett left his heart in. Let's just leave it like that.
Steve Kim is with us. Steve Kim 323 up on Twitter. The spot is brought to you by Snack Nutrition. Okay, well, with that in the rearview mirror, and not very far back in the rearview mirror, what do you make of Eagles players saying, we don't want to go to Brazil. We're being told we can't leave our hotel. I don't know how much you know about Brazil, but listen, I know they want to spread the word of the game, but if you're sending teams to a place where they can't leave the hotel and the city is San Fran-like or worse, what are we doing here?
Yeah, and by the way, and these guys are from Philly. I mean, let's face it, they're not exactly in Green Bay. They're in Philly. When you're telling football players who live and know all about Philadelphia that, hey, Brazil's a little bit dangerous, I would be upset. First of all, as a player, guys, I don't want to be Mr. Killjoy. I would hate these international games. They disrupt the process. To me, they're inconvenient. I just want to play games. I don't think they get paid any more, not that I know of. And now if you're going to add that added element of danger and you have to be cooped up in a hotel room or whatever that facility is, right, and you don't get to be around a lot of your friends and family and your daily routine that you might enjoy wherever you live near Philadelphia or New Jersey, I would find this to be a great inconvenience. I'm just telling you, I would much rather just play 17 games with a regular schedule.
Steve, we appreciate it. What do you got coming up with the three knockdown rule?
Well, three knockdown rule, we took a couple of weeks off. We'll be back next week talking about various things. In a way fought this morning. We'll talk about that, and we'll preview the Canelo fight, which a lot of people, I'm sure, are not going to pay $90 for on pay-per-view.
We'll talk to you soon, Steve. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, guys. Have a great week.
There he is. Steve Kim. I'll admit, I didn't read a whole lot on the Pearsall story. Where in San Fran did it happen? Do you know?
I don't know exactly.
We got to look that up.
Yeah.
I told you, I went there a month ago. I thought it was awesome. I mean, I didn't.
I go there a lot. It's awesome too.
Some of the downtown areas, yeah, they're a little bit dicey. But we know what this is going to be turned into.
Of course.
You should have seen the advertising when I was in H-Town in Texas. Boy, oh boy, the political ads there. Woo! California. The hatred. Oh, yeah. It is freaking absolutely enemy territory. Big Four coming back. Reno joins in. Griffin Cofield and Adam Hill on a Tuesday.